Okay, Ron. Thank you so much, and good evening, everyone. It's good to be here, and it's good to be feeling a little better. And I think I can say that for my neighbor, too, because she went back to work Monday, evidently down at Clemson University where she works. And it's been about, I don't know, 2 or 3 months since she's been back at work. She had both of her knees fixed, I think. She had fell at Clemson down there. She fell in the Little John Auditorium one time, and then she fell somewhere else. And I was wondering if her feet was going to give away with her feet, but she seems to be doing pretty good.
Good.
It's a blessing to see her moving again like she was. So it's wonderful that that's taking place. And back to the 23rd chapter of the book of Acts. And we got down through verse 9 in our last study, but I want to go back and read verse 9 again, because Paul is still involved with getting to Jerusalem and maybe getting out of Jerusalem. I don't know where we'll get him out of there tonight or not, but may take another study to get him away from these people, because
a couple thousand years.
It just seems like it goes on and on and on. And I would really like to see somebody sometime try to make a movie out of this part of this study and from around the 20th chapter of Acts on to the 28th chapter. That would make a good movie, I think. But it's a situation that the Apostle Paul, when he was struck down on the Damascus Road and blinded, and got up and left for a little while, and then come back and stayed with him another 4 or 5 years or 6 years, and then got let down over the wall in a basket and went to Jerusalem. And he's ever since that time, he's either been on the run or been on the move or been on to something that hopefully he wouldn't have to deal with these things so much. He stayed with the Ephesians for about 2 years, or about 2.5 years, really, altogether. And he was boarding one ship and then go a little ways and then board another ship. And then it seemed like a cloak and dagger thing that got him away from some of these people. And in the meanwhile, he got hung up with the old boy that was doing the shrines for Diana. And they got after him, and that was one reason why he had to kind of do these things he done to get away. He didn't to move out and get going. Well, he got into another situation by the time he got to Jerusalem. And so then that didn't end really great, because he wound up chained between two soldiers. And they took him up the stairs into a castle that was pretty close, or they called it a castle, but it was pretty close to the temple. It was between Jerusalem, the city of, and the temple. It was, up on the mount. And they were there, I don't know where you realized it or not, but they were there, a garrison, I guess you call it a garrison, of soldiers with centurions. Centurions was people, it was over 100 soldiers. And they had a chief captain which was over them, and totaled about 1,000 people. Well, if you've got to guard a temple, and it takes 1,000 people to do it, then you might figure that this is not a usual situation. And they, and these people were always at each other or couldn't agree with one another. So something come up and they wanted to kill somebody, then they could all agree together about that somewhat. So here we are. And I'm going to read 9, and then we'll start our study with 10. But it says in verse 9, and now the Sanhedrin Council was here too. In the area of Jerusalem or the area of the temple. Now that was 80 people plus the priest, which Paul didn't think very much of the high priest. He called him a whited wall. Which, like, you know, if you got an old house and you paint a wall to make it look good, the inside don't change any. And so that's the way he was looking at this guy. He said, you're just a whited wall. You look good on the outside, but on the inside you ain't got it. And
he should know.
Oh, yeah, he knew. No doubt about it. Verse 9. And it said, I'll just read verse 8 to you. It says, for the Sadducees said there is no resurrection, neither angel nor spirit, but the Pharisees confess both. In verse 9, when Paul was before them, now this was before he was before the council of the 80 that Rome let the Jews have their own thing over the their religious part of their life, okay? And 9 says this, and there arose a great cry, full stop. What were they in a tizzy about? And the scribes that were of the Pharisees' part arose and strove, saying, we find no evil in this man, but if a spirit or an angel has spoken to him, let us not fight against God. And so the Pharisees were in the minority here a little bit. And the Sadducees that didn't believe, I don't know if they believed anything, but I don't know how they could have gotten involved with this thing of 80, because it all started in the tabernacle when they were wandering, you know. And it seemed like they just had shunned God or didn't believe in God or didn't believe the word like they should have. And or they would have given it a little more consideration than what they did, the way I see it. Now, that's the way I see it. I might be on the wrong line, but you know, when you get in the fork of the road, especially in these days that we're talking about here, there's one or two ways you can go. It's haul act or yell act, the way you walk. And haul act was the way man wants to walk on his own. And I think this is the Sadducees thing. And yell act was the part that where they would follow the advice of God. And that's about as simple as I can make that. So, but now, they all, when they met together, they had one high priest. They had one person that Paul didn't care that much about in this particular incident. Verse 10. Okay, we said all that to say this. I'm going to read it out of the King James Version. It says this, and when there arose a great dissension, the chief captain, fearing lest Paul should have been pulled into pieces, of them, commanded the soldiers to go down and to take him by force from among them and bring him into the castle. Well, he had been in the castle. He had been on the steps of the castle, and it evidently had more than one level, because they went up the steps to another level and maybe, you know, up towards the third level. So I would really like to see what people thought the castle might look like at that point. But it was somewhere between the temple and Jerusalem. I don't know. It was 6 or 7 miles between the two, and it could have been anywhere between there. Okay, let me go back to my notes. It says in verse 10, "And when there arose a great dissension," and this word Greek is the word stasis. And, you know, that's part of the word that Paul used about Christ is death and being raised again. And it was ek anastasis, ek anastasis. And means to be taken out of from the rest of the dead. And that's when Paul was making his statement in Philippians that he had seen what God had given to them. And he said he just counted all that but done. He wanted something different. He wanted something like Christ got when he gave his life up and got it all back again. And then some. Okay. And said the chief captain here, it mentions the chief captain again, and this was a Roman officer over 1,000 men. He was over the whole garrison that were there. I don't know if they were there to guard the temple or to keep the temple from being ransacked, or if it was just to keep order between Jerusalem and the temple, because there was always a lot of people going from one to the other. And you see, the like that the temple was theirs. You know, it was what God had given to David, and David gave to his son to build it, because David couldn't build it because he had shed blood. And so here we are. And the temple. And near the temple. And they were, it says, fearing. And fearing there in the Greek is euthlediomea. The text reads a different word, and that is phobia, kind of like the word starts off like being photo, but it wasn't photo. But it says a much more common name, a common Greek word. And he says lest, and that word lest is the little word me, M-E in the Greek. Paul should have been pulled into pieces or torn asunder, as it were. And that Greek word is dia, meaning out of or away from being whole. Because he thought if they got a hold of him, they just ripped him apart. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that word is diasteo by them. And the chief captain commanded the soldiers, and this is literally an army or a detachment to go down and to take him, Paul, by force, if necessary, out of or from among them that are called Arpazo in the Greek, and bring him into the castle. And so he had been in the castle, been chained up between two soldiers. They listened to him, didn't want to hear him, and it got so bad they had to carry him somewhere else. And so the chief captain took him and took him down to wherever the council was meeting, and he turned him over to the council of his own, to the Jew. When he found out he was a Jew, this is where you guys need to be. You can take care of it yourself. And now, wait a minute. They found out he couldn't do it, so they passed the order out to go back and get Paul and put him back in the castle again. So in and out he is. Then we get to verse 11. We get a little bit of light.
He was literally such a problem, he didn't know what to do.
Yeah, he was a mess. I mean, this was a mess. To make it kind of plain and normal words that we can understand. Verse 11 says, "In the night following, the Lord stood by him and said, Be of good cheer, Paul, for as thou hast testified of me in Jerusalem." So evidently the castle was near Jerusalem. I have not seen that yet, but so must thou bear witness also at Rome. Okay, so the Lord knew he was going to go to Rome. Sooner or later he was going to Rome. And so let me get back into my notes again, and it says, "And the night following." The night following there in the Greek is iti amai. In the Greek, that's the way I can pronounce it. "And the Lord," or the Lord Jesus Christ, "stood by him," Paul, "and said," well, here we are, the Lord and Paul together. "And he said unto Paul, Be of good cheer, Paul," full stop. So he's trying to cheer Paul up a little bit, and Paul really needs it at this point. And he says, "For as thou hast testified of me," and the word "testified" there is di, let me get it going, diamartyromai of me. In Jerusalem. And there's the little Greek word EIS again. "So must thou bear witness." And to bear witness is this. It's in the Greek is martyrio. To bear witness is martyrio.
That's where they get the word martyr from.
Yeah. Also at Rome, or the text reads at Rome also, I think, is what it had in there. And that's in verse 11. And so, I guess the Lord appeared to him that evening or that night, because verse 12 says, "And when it was day," verse 12, "And when it was day, certain of the Jews banded together and bound themselves under a curse, saying that they would neither eat nor drink until they had killed Paul. So evidently, your Sadducees, those that didn't believe in resurrection, those that didn't believe in angels, and all this stuff that God had prepared for them, they had the most people. They were over 40 of them. So you're talking about 80 people. So they, if they had 45, then they had a a quota of them, more so than the Pharisees. And it says, and when it was day, the Jews, and it says certain of the Jews, and certain of us is was added to the text. The Jews banded together, and my notes says from this, having made a coalition of the two sects. And the coalition there of the two sects is in the Greek word is Sesterni, and bound themselves under a curse. Well, you know, the Lord requires a vow. So these guys, these Sadducees must have not have believed in a vow. But they did believe in a curse that the other people around there did not. Because it was a heathenish curse. It wasn't of God. But Sadducees, they didn't care. If it suited their mode of doing things, then...
That makes you wonder how many of them starved to death, don't it?
Well,
because we know he goes all the way to Rome.
They lied.
He lives 200 years in his own power.
Yeah, but they lied about the whole thing anyway.
Yeah.
They said, well, we, you know, our vow is a curse. Okay. Now, there's a little bit going on here about this curse. And bound themselves under a curse, saying, in the Greek, anathema. No, anamathazeo, saying that they would neither eat nor drink until they had killed Paul. And
that's a serious vow there.
Yeah, but you know, those at Damascus, before they let Paul down out of the basket,
yeah,
they
thing.
Were doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And they were evidently a bunch of Sadducees there, too. And now this curse, we'll get involved in this curse in just a minute, a little bit, because it's not something that we really need to learn a lot about, but we need to know the difference between a vow and a curse anyway. So here we are, verse 13. And they were more than 40 which had made this conspiracy. Now, that was information. That verse 13 was there for information. And so that's the reason that the Sadducees had outnumbered the Pharisees. If all of the council, their council was there with their high priest. Okay? So, it says they were more than 40 there. 80 was the number of the council, plus the high priest. which had made this conspiracy. And the conspiracy is the word, in the Greek word, it's sonomosai. And it's only used here in the New Testament at this point here, verse 13. And so we get down to 14. And 14 says this, and they came to the chief priests and elders and said, we have bound ourselves under a great curse, that we will eat nothing until we have slain Paul. Okay, so here we're going to get involved a little bit about this curse. So they came to the chief priest. And the chief priest is the one that evidently is looked at as the keeper of this whole area here that is under his control. And they had back years and years ago, they had a big deal, and about 400 people stormed the area between Jerusalem and the temple. And most of them got killed, and a few of them got away. But, you know, they thought, when they heard Paul start off with, they thought Paul was still one of them. But when Paul started speaking to them in their language, in their own languages, then the Jews realized that, oh, it couldn't have been that dude. So they listened to Paul for a little while, and then they said, oh, go away with this dude. Okay? And they came to the chief priests and elders and said, we have bound. And to be bound there is to got all of them in one mind. Well, that is really a vow at this point, that it's a curse to do what they said they were going to do. So here you have a little bit of friction between words concerning the difference between a vow, and a curse. Because God would not accept the curse, but he would accept the vow. And so they had bound themselves under a great curse. And then literally it says here, we have anathematized.
Yeah, anathematized.
Anathematized, that's a...
You remember the term anathema in Maranatha?
Yeah.
But it's used somewhere else in the baptism.
Well, you know, this is something that Luke was writing, because I think it doesn't say this, but it does sound like it is medical. Yeah, but I think it's part of a medical term. I think it's where you would put somebody out.
I don't know. Oh, like a
anesthetizement. Yeah. Well, if you kill somebody, you would certainly figure you put him out. At least they tried to do that to Paul at Derby, and it didn't work. But anyway, they had. And joined themselves together. And we need to look at Mark 14:71. And that will tell us a little more about it. So, if you got your Bible, turn back with me to Mark. Let me find where I had it in 14.
14.
Mark 14, 71. Okay, 14:71. If you got a companion Bible, then number 14:22 is the page. But we're going to look at the maid had saw Peter, and we'll go to 69. It says, and a maid saw him again and began to say to them that stood by, this is one of them, when they were going to crucify Christ. Okay? And Peter denied it again, and a little after they stood by, and again they stood by, said again to Peter, surely they are one of them, full stop. And then, after you think about it for a minute, it says, for thou art a Galilean, and thy speech agreeth thereto. But he began to curse and to swear, saying, I know not this man of whom ye speak. And that was the denial that Peter made to those there where they were crucifying Christ. And he says, no, I don't know him. And he went so far as to swear and to curse. And so, where did he pick that up from? Let's go back to verse 14. It says, it is a pagan original anathema that we will eat nothing, and that means to taste nothing, and the other word there is Medeus, until we have slain Paul. So, we find in Mark's meaning of this thing gives us the idea of a pagan ritual or a pagan way of doing things. So you see the difference between a vow and a curse. It's really opposite of one another, 180 degrees opposite one another. And then we get to verse 15. Let me get back over to Acts 23, 15. I'm going to read out of the King James again. It says, now therefore, ye, and you see the word ye there, with a council signifying to the chief captain that he bring him down unto you tomorrow, as though you would inquire something more perfectly concerning him, full stop. And we, or ever he come near, are ready to kill him. Oh, they meant business. Now, they went to the chief priest, to the council.
Got a little assassination plan.
Yeah. And even told it to the chief priest and to the council, which the high priest was there, of the Jews who were there. And so, they looked at that and said, oh, man, this is getting kind of wild and hairy here. Now, therefore, ye. And when you see therefore in the scripture, you need to stop a little bit and look and think about it, like you're driving a car along and you come to a railroad track that doesn't have any barricades or barriers to come down in front of you to keep you off there. And so you need to stop, look, and listen. So this is what therefore is there for. And in this part here, it's really there for Paul. Because they've got their little trickery set up. Okay? Now therefore, ye with the council signify. And that ye with there in the Greek is the word that starts with sun, S-U-N. So let's go to the appendage and look at 104, 16. Okay, I got it right here. On prepositions 104 and Roman numeral. Yeah, 16. After turn the page, 104:16-2. Yeah. It says with the accusative. It denotes the extension of such activities, meaning hence or around. If you look at Mark 9:42, Luke 13:8, Acts 28:7, and Philippians 2. This is Acts 13. I guess I may have. Acts 104:16. 16:16. Well, I guess I didn't get it right. Oh, sun, yeah. There's only one case. It's dative. And see, under the starting of the word meta, number 11 above, that would be an XI. Let me go back to 11 and see what 11 said. XI2. Okay, XI2. In the accusative case, it means after. Always in connection with time. It means after, always in connection with time. So the council signified to the chief captain that he would bring Paul down, and add in the Greek is kataego unto you tomorrow, as though you would be about to inquire or ask. So they wanted him to come down with the express intent, according to them, to ask him something. And this is the medical word for making a careful diagnosis. And that word is diagnosco. Diagnosco.
Well, this is our word diagnosis.
Yeah, a medical term.
Medical word.
For making a careful diagnosis of something more perfectly concerning him. Full stop. Concerning. So they wanted to make it sound like they wanted to be sure what they had.
We got to talk to him again.
Yeah. So we got to get him down here. You get him down here. We'll do the talking.
We'll take care of it.
Yeah. And so that would cover both the chief captain and the high priest for doing something nasty, doing the killing. Okay. And it says, and we, wherever he come before us or near us, are ready to kill him. And that word to kill him in the Greek is anaireo. And so they had then come in to made an agreement both with the chief captain and the high priest in 15. So they had laid it all out. Well, how's he going to get out of that? Verse 16. And if you look in the companion Bible, if you have a companion Bible and you look at it, there's a space between 15 and 16. So it changes a little bit. Here, so you see, it don't follow the same exact line that it had been following, and it changes a little bit. In the structure here, if you go back and look at the structure, you will see, yeah, this is different, a little different now. Something else has come up. And when Paul's sister's son heard of their lying in wait, he went and entered into the castle and told Paul. I don't know how he got into the castle where all the other soldiers were. They don't tell us that.
God found him away.
But during this study, you know, he had been moved from one place back into the castle again. And here, his sister's son comes up and wants to see him. Evidently, they let him go in to see Paul. It's like, well, he's just under house arrest. He's not out running around somewhere. Okay. And when Paul's sister's son, I call it his nephew, because the word calls him a young man. How young, I don't know. His nephew. And it's in the Greek. I went back and looked. It is the word in the Greek, kurios, meaning a young person. Heard of their lying in wait. Well, there's two situations going on here about the same time. One of them was, I think that Paul's nephew was looking for him, and he went into where the council was, where they were making their plans. They didn't pay him much attention.
Just a kid.
Because he's just a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But he learned that, and evidently he learned where Paul was, and so he went from there to the castle.
He had already heard that the Lord's told him, you testify to me in Jerusalem, but you're going to be doing it in Rome too. So
yeah.
He already knows.
So
they're not going to be successful.
So he knows that.
Yeah.
Paul knows that. And I'm not sure the kid knows that, but
yeah.
Paul knows that. And so the kid knows the plot.
Mm-hmm.
He had to know the plot. He had to go to where the council was because they were still talking about it when he got there, and I think they just didn't pay the boy any real attention, okay? And it says, lying in wait, any derah. This may be rendered having come in open to them, to him, the council, and entered suggesting that he made the discovery accidentally. So when he was in the council, he overheard what they said and what they were planning. So the kid knew a pretty good little bit about it. So he went, and so he asked somebody where Paul was, and they told him. And so he went on down and he got to see Paul. And he says, he found out about this discovery accidentally, but it was of God. So we understand that was Paul was not to be out of the will, to be cut at the will of the enemy any more than the seed of God. He, the nephew, went after learning of the plan or the plot and entered into the castle where Paul was in custody, and repeated it to Paul. And I put in my notes, wow, how great is our God.
God ain't done with him yet.
No, and well, we know that. The kid knew that.
It was.
And Paul knew that.
Saying a while ago.
Yeah. Okay.
We know it. You know, the kid didn't know it.
Yeah.
Paul might have knew it.
Well, let's go on at least another verse there again. Then Paul called one of the centurions unto him and said, bring this young man unto the chief captain, for he hath a certain thing to tell him. So then Paul called one of the centurions, a Roman, over a dispatch of 100 men unto him. Because, you see, they would have been at least 10 centurions there with a chief priest. I mean, with the chief captain. And said, bring this young man unto the chief captain, full stop. And when this happened, evidently the young man told the chief captain, and it says, for he hath a certain thing to tell him. And so this was somewhat of a secret because, you know, the Sadducees and Pharisees didn't know that this kid knew this. Verse 18. So he, the centurion, took him, the nephew, and brought him to the chief captain. And the chief captain there in the Greek is pros, P-R-O-S, or the high man, and said, Paul the prisoner, called me unto him and prayed me to bring this young man unto thee, whom hath something to say or to tell thee. This is verse 18. So he took him and brought him to the chief captain and said, Paul the prisoner called me to him and prayed me to bring this young man unto thee who hath something to say unto thee. And also he called him a prisoner. And Paul the prisoner. And it says this was the title the apostle cherished as one of honor. Because Paul was always known as Paul the prisoner.
And later on he'll call himself the prisoner of Jesus Christ.
And absolutely. Now verse 19 says this, and we'll probably stop with this one. It says this verse tells us something well of the chief captain. Then the chief captain took him, the nephew of Paul, by the hand and went with him aside privately. And there's a note there in the app side is 104-2. And it says this expression occurs many times in the first three Gospels, translated apart or aside or something like that, and inquired, literally asked, "What is it that thou hast to tell me?" And he, the nephew, said, I'll just read 20. And he, the nephew, said, the Jews have agreed to, with a desire, Santissima, the wish or prayed, that thou wouldest bring down Paul tomorrow unto the council, as though they would inquire or ask somewhat of him more perfectly.
Well, he got the story right, didn't he?
Yeah.
Dead on the money on the details.
Yeah. And so, verse 21 and 22, we'll pick up there next time because we're out of time tonight. And there's a couple of verses there that's fairly good size and has a lot of stuff in it. But here we see that where we're leaving it is the chief captain now is telling the young kid, and he took him aside and showed him all the things that a kid wouldn't normally see a soldier do in line of duty, but this soldier did him a great favor, and so he was doing the soldier a great favor. And so one favor deserves another favor. And so he tells him, he says, don't you tell nobody else that you told me this.
See, the problem with what they were planning was whatever guards were guarding Paul would have been charged with his life.
Yeah.
And they would probably have been killed by the guys that were lying in wait as well.
Yeah.
So there was going to be a bloodbath over there.
Yeah. So you see the chief captain knew how to get around it.
Yeah.
And so this is the rest of the story. This is the rest of the story, but Paul is still not going to be freed. I'll just put it that way. He's not going to be freed because he's going to be carried to Felix for some time.
Mm-hmm.
And to be with Felix until the king comes around. And Felix wouldn't let him loose until the head man come by at that time to do that. Then they were going to get him on the boat, and he's going to be into a hurricane for about 19 days or something. Then he's going to be shipwrecked. Do all this stuff. So we're not done with the story, but we're going to see some of the rest of the story here in the next study. So, bless you for being with us and giving us your ear here, and that you may have gotten a little information out of that will be very prevalent here, especially to the Apostle Paul, because we now know the Lord has said, you're going to testify. You testified to me here in Jerusalem, but you're going to testify to me again in Rome. So we know that Paul is not done with his life here, because it goes on. But nevertheless, some of the good parts are in here, and some of them are not so good. But during all this rip-roaring stuff, after the shipwreck, Paul gets snake bit. But he don't die. But he healed a lot of people, and then he can't heal nobody else. And so there's a lot to take advantage of in this before we get down toward the last chapter and a half of the book of Acts. And that's the reason it's so important that, you know, we go to the end and that we know it all. I mean, we know it all that we can know concerning what God had told him and what Ananias told him in the ninth chapter of the book of Acts.
Yep.
That he's got to do all these things before he's done. And evidently he did.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where we leave it tonight, right there. And give you some thought to think about it for a while, and we'll get involved in it again. Well, thank you for your time, and may the Lord bless you next week, and we'll try it again if everything goes well and we're still here.
Thank you.